Well, happy St. Patrick's Day to everyone. Our goal is that next St. Patrick's Day, everyone will be able to go to their local bar, pub, restaurant, wherever they want to celebrate St. Patrick's Day and get a Guinness or cornbread, corned beef, a little cabbage, and cornbread too if they want that, whatever they want. To kind of tell us where, how fast things are moving. It was just 2 weeks ago today that we had our announcement about the Arnold. So when we try to understand where we're going to be 2 weeks from today, that sort of gives you an idea. Things are will continue to move very, very quickly, and the world will look different, significantly different in 2 weeks than it does today. For our viewers at home, our setup is different today. We are working to comply and are complying with the suggestion from the president in regard to not having more than 10 people in a room. We have a much bigger press corps than that, and so we have our media in two different rooms. And we are here in a separate room. This is actually what's called the state room in the Capitol building here in Columbus. Let me tell you who's here. Dr. Andy Thomas is here. Mike Abrams of the Hospital Association is here. We have Tamara McBride, who is the Health Preparedness Director from the Department of Health. We also, of course, have Dr. Amy Acton and the Lieutenant Governor, John Houston. Let me start with yesterday's announcement in regard to the election. We have, first of all, let me just kind of outline our goals. Our goal is that everybody that wants to vote will be able to vote. Our goal is that no one will have to choose between their constitutional rights and risking their health. The decision that we made in regard to, and that Dr. Acton in her order made, is an order that I fully support. It was made in the best interests of the people of the state of Ohio. We had 35,000 poll workers who were going to be showing up this morning. As many of you know, when you go into your polling booth, many, many times you'll see familiar faces. You'll see people who have been there for many, many years, Democrat and Republican, who have manned those booths and who run our elections at the local level. We'll find that some of them are 65 years of age and older, some of them even significantly more older than that. So one of our considerations yesterday was not to expose them. One of the things that we know about this virus is that many times we do not, individuals who have this do not know they have it yet. And so a person in all good conscience could be going to vote and they could be spreading. And again, for those poll workers, for 13 hours to be sitting there, we felt, Dr. Acton felt, Health Department felt, was not safe. Conversely, we could have poll workers who also had the virus and did not know that, and did not know that they would be spreading that. So we felt that this would be a real, real disaster. That's why the order by Dr. Acton was issued last night shortly after 10 p.m. As we move forward, there are very good solutions out there, either by the General Assembly or by the courts. Again, our goal must be that people have ample opportunity to vote, that they have plenty of time to do that, and that whatever order we end up with gives them a significant period of time. And the reason I say this is because we are entering a more difficult time, and we're going to have more and more of our citizens who become ill. And we need to allow those citizens who become ill to be able to have the opportunity at some point to vote. And the longer we can spread that time out, the better that is. We presented a plan. It's a plan that we felt would preserve people's rights, extend those rights, set the election at June 2nd with ample opportunity for voting to occur from basically after this election or after this election day itself. My understanding from Frank LaRose is they have 10 days. Then you know what all votes are in. Then at that point, you know who has not voted. Then you can move on at that point or shortly thereafter to an absentee ballot regimen. Absentee ballot programs are something that Secretary of State runs. They know how to run them. And our suggestion of June 2nd voting and ample long voting in regard to absentee ballots was made in conjunction with working with the Secretary of State. I again want to thank him. I want to thank all his team. I want to thank all everyone across the state of Ohio at local boards of elections as we move on through this. Let me again just reiterate, we are open for discussion about how this gets worked out, but it's really a fairly simple thing to do, and that is to have a significant period of time, and I will insist upon a significant period of time, so that people have ample opportunity to vote. Our normal primary would have been in May, because it's a presidential election year. It's held in March. So we have plenty of time to hold an election, to continue this election, and to move us forward. Let me move on to a couple other issues. I want to thank our so many people out there in Ohio who are making sacrifices and who are doing just amazing work. I want to thank our fellow Ohioans who continue each day to serve the most vulnerable members of our society. They are doing this at great sacrifice. These are people, some contracted, some state employees, who provide essential direct care for our fellow citizens who are developmentally disabled, as well as our elderly community. So a little shout out to them. I know they've had to juggle things with their families. They continue to show up. This is essential care for people to be able to continue to live in their homes, and people to be able to get through each and every day and have the best quality of life that is possible. So thank you, each and every one of you, for that work. I want to talk for a moment about one of our challenges that we know is coming. And that is our hospital capacity and making sure that when this hits hard, we are ready for it. I'll go back to the discussion about the curve. Again, what we're trying to do is flatten this as much as we can so that we do not have the spike that we see that has occurred in Italy, so we're not in a situation where we're overrun, where we don't have the equipment, we don't have the personnel. These are all things that are very, very significant. One of the things that we worry about, not having enough beds, not having enough ventilators, not having enough personal protection equipment for the individual doctors. We already have talked a few days ago about our request to our dentists and our veterinarians, and we thank them for their work in this area to really postpone all but the essential surgery that really, really needs to take place. Any elective surgery that preserves that equipment, personal protection equipment, for example, and that makes more of that available. At this point, I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Amy Acton, who's going to talk about this and some of the things that we're going to be doing. We are going to be issuing an order today that is compliant and is consistent with an understanding about surgeries and other activities in our hospitals so that, again, we can preserve personnel, we can preserve beds, we can preserve the personal equipment, protection equipment that's needed as we move forward into a more difficult time. Dr. Acton?
Thank you, Governor. Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. There's so much I want to share with you, but we have a lot. We have our guests here today who will be talking a lot more about why everything you're doing, every person, and everything we do right now really does matter. And tomorrow, I'm going to talk a little bit more. I just had a radio show with my hometown of Youngstown, Ohio, Dan Rivers there, and we talked about how do we get here. I know this is so much for everyone to be taking in, and I'm going to go back through the history of this tomorrow. And we are also getting the past Ohio News Network clips of sort of the what have become a little bit of like public health 101 lectures all put together for you so you can kind of follow this because I think we each come to this awareness at our own time and in our own way. But again, timing is everything. And but please know we will get through this together. And what I'm about to describe to you is what we see is coming, but when we make these choices we're making and that the governor is making and other governors and leaders throughout the world are making, this really is going to get us through it in a lot sooner, in a sense, a lot better way. But you need to know that what you're doing is really making a difference. So it's very important to say that there was an important study that came out in the United Kingdom by Dr. Ferguson, and it was done by the Imperial College. And they're really taking a look at the very best modeling and data we have. We know that our science changes every day, every hour. But you can see in the press conference the president had yesterday, this is the very same data that his team is using, the models that they are looking at when they came up with some of the new guidance about 10 people in a room, about social distancing, about really seeking that if you're over 65 to stay at home. And this is very important data because it's going to into our curve a little more deeply. So first of all, remember that what we've been saying all along is that we're saving lives. Every one of us that doesn't spread it to someone else logarithmically with a doubling time of every 6 days is keeping less of us getting this. So important. But that's one part of a couple of mitigation strategies. There's actually 4 layers. We call it early, targeted, layered interventions. And I want to talk to you why we have to do all of them. We have to do all of them now. So if we could bring up a second chart here. Yeah, it might not fit quite right. But this was a study that's been done in the UK. And what this study looked like, because you're going to see it in the media today, and I don't want people to become overly frightened. Again, we promised so long ago to tell you what we know when we know it and tell you the truth. And sometimes this truth is going to be a bit scary. But the point of this is that this study was done looking as if we did nothing. And then it looks very carefully at everything we're doing and why collectively it will make a difference. So we've always been talking about the curve. And if we did nothing, again, and I'll refer you to the UK study by Ferguson, we would see that very more scary, sharp, steep climb that we saw in Wuhan. And everything we do from doing nothing to isolating cases and the careful travel measures and all the things we did originally, to now closing schools and universities, and all the things that we're closing down now, to the extreme of what we now see in San Francisco, where my boys yesterday were told to shelter in place. I have two boys, 28 and 26, Jake and Sam. And that those measures, because they're a little bit farther ahead than where Ohio is right now in our spread, all those things start to decrease the time. So we're actually going to extend this time a little bit. You know, we all want this over quickly, but we have to extend the time and slow the spread because that decreases the peak. Early on, I told you that some of the early modeling was saying we might peak at late April, mid-May. And again, my initial numbers were based on no interventions, which is why we had to do our interventions quickly. And what you'll see is that peak, you can see the peak starting to spread a little bit. We will slow it down. There's no scenario now by which we won't have a surge. But if we did nothing, the estimates were that 2.2 million Americans would die. And if we do these measures in the absolute way they're intended, again, we have no vaccine, there are no other things, these are our only tools, but if we do them, we can cut that hospital surge by these authors' example by two-thirds. What we're doing, every one of us can help contribute to that, and it will decrease our deaths by a half. And as I said, the surge, as you'll hear from the folks about our hospitals, it's not just about the people who get coronavirus. It's about all the rest of us who might need our hospitals to give a birth, or if we get in a car accident, or if we have a heart attack or a stroke. And it's more than the hospitals. We're keeping the workers healthy right now. We're keeping our firefighters and our frontline responders healthy. If they get sick, then you take out, as we did with our one firefighter who had a case, the whole firehouse. And then they're all in isolation and quarantine. So it's all these ripple effects that we're having. And so that is why what you're doing makes all the difference. Here in Ohio, right now, we have, as of this morning, 67 cases. Again, just a little over a week ago, we had our first case. The illness onset range is still from February 7th. Again, knowing that we had infectivity before that, and tomorrow I will go into a whole timeline on that. And the latest onset was March 16th. Our age range in Ohio is 14 to 86 years, now with a median age of 48. And we know that even in 40 to 50-year-olds, the case fatality rate can be 1 in 250. Sex, it is 26 females and 41 males. Hospitalizations are 17, and there are many ICU hospitalizations included with that, so that's more sick. And we now know we have 16 of our counties, but some of that county data is including people from other counties that have gone to a more major hospital, and we're working on that data as we speak. So that is the numbers we know. We know have many more in the queue as our testing is going up. A couple of things to say. Thank you to our vets and our dentists. They are already donating their PPE. We're going to talk today about our order to stop non-essential surgeries or elective surgeries. They are taking those materials to the EMA, and you'll be hearing more about that. Your local EMA station, they're gearing up to take all your supplies. That's going to make a world of difference. Those of you out there that have nasal swabs, the actual swab you would do, if you have any of those, perhaps vets, that might be equipment you have. Our restaurants and our food services are bringing their latex gloves, other industries that have glove supplies. I know schools even have them that aren't using them. Those might be things that we can be bringing to our EMA so that we have more supplies. We also received and are budgeting for the first funds that were allotted to us for public health. It was about $15 million that we received from the federal government. $10 million of that will go out to our local partners. We have 113 health departments. We're a very decentralized state in Ohio. They're on the front lines right now doing these disease detective investigations, and that money will be going for their work, their monitoring investigation, their containment efforts, and their mitigation efforts. The Ohio Department of Health, my 1,100 amazing employees, many of whom are working from home right now, some of that will go for the work we're doing in surveillance and monitoring and running this investigation. I want to do a special call out to our call center, our 833-4-ASK-ODH number. This is a massive undertaking. Again, this is a lot like a war, and we set up a call center and we set up a website a couple weeks ago when life looked a lot differently. And I know there are people who have called. There have been stories about calling and being put on hold. I want you to know that this is a massive volunteer and employee work that is going on. We are scaling that up. We're getting professional private sector advice on scaling that the same way a major business would operate a call center. But that takes a few days, and we're gearing that up. But we're here for you. Those workers are answering your calls as fast as they can. But that will be the one-stop shop so that everyone knows one place to go. Our website, coronavirus.ohio.gov, still has some of the best information, and we're posting new things. We listen to parents and pediatricians, and there's a lot more guidance for family on there today. And we are, for our local partners, we're redeveloping it so it's easier to find our orders and easier to find the tools that will help you do your work. But I just want to thank those workers as well. So one last thing. As the governor has always said, this is the big one. This is the 1918 scenario of the Spanish flu, where we know we lost many more people in this country by far than we lost in the war. And that a difference of 2 weeks, and the absolute blessing that we have in the state of Ohio to have these 2 weeks when we see our peers around the world making life and death decisions about who gets a ventilator, when we see our sister cities in places like San Francisco, places where my boys are sheltering in place. We see what's happening in New York and other cities. Everything we do here in Ohio keeps us in St. Louis. We're blessed to have that colleague of mine, Bridget Harrison, from Cleveland, Catholic family. St. Patrick's Day is everything. She reminded me that St. Patrick was the god of keeping all the snakes and the pests away, and that her family has a 90-year history in one of the oldest parishes of this day. They're missing their parade. She's here working and not with her family. This is a call out from her to you. But this is the difference. This is the difference this will make. We want to be St. Louis, and we want to do the things that the 2 weeks that we have and what the hospitals we're telling you about. So next, I'd like to introduce Mike Abrams. He is the CEO and president of the Ohio Hospital Association. We have a gift in this state. Our hospitals are amazing. They're going to come together. They're doing this work together in unprecedented ways to help keep you safe through this surge. Mike.
Thank you, Dr. Atkin and Governor DeWine. You know, my office is right across the street from here, and as I was walking over to this conference, I contemplated the same thing the governor started his comments with, and that is, it was barely 2 weeks ago that the governor made his announcement about the Arnold, and I can remember thinking that, A, it was the right thing to do, but B, it was such a dramatic measure, and I thought maybe that would be the most dramatic measure we would need to take, and clearly, that feels like an eternity ago. We've come so far just in the last 12, 14 days. I also will start my remarks by observing that I was, as I do every morning, I was reading the Wall Street Journal, and I was so proud of the commentary from a columnist this morning in the Journal who really lauded our governor and called him out individually as one of the true leaders in the nation doing a great job for our state. Called him prescient at one point, but I do really am very, very grateful for all of the great leadership that Governor DeWine and his team have offered to this difficult situation. Well, one of the things I think that's happened over the last couple weeks since the original announcement is the public's understanding of the gravity of the situation has increased. And I would like to observe that I share the public's concern, as Dr. Acton pointed out. But what I want is for the public to share my optimism that while this is a difficult situation, the healthcare infrastructure in the state of Ohio is quite strong. So you have read across the state, many hospitals, very large systems and small hospitals alike, have announced that they are delaying procedures that can safely be delayed. And the chair-elect of the OHA is the president of University of Cincinnati Health, Dr. Rick Lofgren, and he always observes when we talk about that issue, is that the public should fully understand that those procedures are being delayed not because hospitals are unsafe places to be. They're being delayed because of the importance of allocating resources in a way that allows us to focus on priority cases. And so that is something that we need to consistently and constantly kind of remind ourselves. At the Ohio Hospital Association, we deployed a process whereby we asked some of the foremost experts in the state and throughout the country how we could establish guardrails between which our hospitals could operate so that they could apply some guidelines consistently throughout the state from community to community, from system to system. And I think what that resulted in is some very, very credible guidelines that hospitals will follow, no matter if you're in Toledo or Dayton or in anywhere in the state. We also consulted kind of learned organizations like the American College of Surgeons and other groups that have given a great deal of scholarly attention to how policies like this should look. As a matter of routine, hospital leaders regularly evaluate situations and contingency plans because unique situations, if you just think about the reading the local media from time to time, unique situations pop up somewhat regularly. It wasn't that long ago that hospitals in Ohio were dealing with tornadoes. It was just a couple years ago that Lancaster was dealing with the botulism situation. So hospitals are regularly kind of pressure testing their own infrastructure for their community to make sure that they are capable of surging when that needs to occur and relaxing back when that surge can safely relax back. Every year in Ohio hospitals, there are 36 million encounters with Ohio hospitals throughout the state. And at the Ohio Hospital Association, we have data on all of them. And we can deploy that data to kind of do analytics and figure out some proper public policies and make some proper observations about where things are likely to occur. The situation today is that hospitals in our state are about a little less than 75% at capacity inpatient-wise, which is about normal for this time of year. Often it's a little heavier this time of year because of influenza. And so that is to say that we can safely surge another 25% without doing anything extraordinary at all. Let me give you an example. I was talking to a hospital leader just earlier today who right now staffs for about 60 beds in his hospital. And without much effort, he could surge that to 90 beds. He has the ability, the rooms that he could open, and the infrastructure to surge from 60 to 90. Last night, his inpatient count was in the low 50s. So essentially, he could add an additional 30 without doing anything particularly extraordinary. But if he and other hospitals throughout the state did need to take extraordinary measures, there are those options. I want to give you just a couple of examples. Hospitals have been, for example, in discussion with local nursing homes, where you might be able to have either a wing of a nursing home or a building that is owned by a nursing home that could accept a certain number of non-infectious patients safely, where those patients could safely be cared for. So you're essentially turning a section of a nursing home into an area that could provide more traditional hospital services. What that would do is open up the more traditional hospital building for surge ability in case they had COVID-19 or other patients that required hospital care. We have hospitals throughout our state who have talked to local hotels. They could actually redeploy a floor of a hotel to bring in non-infectious patients who could safely be cared for in a hotel and, again, freeing up space in the more traditional hospital. I have talked to hospital leaders throughout our state who have been in communication with their local leaders to talk about reopening hospitals that have recently closed. If we need to do that, that's something we could do. Those are, in many cases, appropriate buildings to open up and could do various things that would be helpful. We have 33 critical access hospitals in our state, and traditionally those hospitals are limited by federal law to have only 25 beds and have only a 96-hour stay. The federal government has already relaxed that rule, so we can surge into critical access hospitals beyond 25 beds with stays longer than 96 hours. If you go to the several hospitals throughout our state today, you will maybe see tents outside the ER. And those are being, in fact, one hospital leader called that a respiratory waiting room. Typically, that is an area of the hospital that has been set up in the last few days to essentially do triage, to do an assessment of a patient in a safer area so they can tell whether this patient needs to proceed more into the traditional emergency department and maybe into the hospital, or if they could be safely cared for outside of the hospital. So when you drive by a hospital today and you see tents going up, I just wanted you to have some familiarity with what's happening in that tent. Speaking of creativity, our son, Thomas, is a junior at the University of Dayton, and he is probably enjoying a little bit the extra time off from University of Dayton, although I have to put a shout out to the Flyers, who I feel terribly sorry for about the basketball season. But Premier Health has partnered with University of Dayton, so now at UD Arena, instead of seeing a basketball game, you might see safe testing going on, and that is because they wanted to do that off-site from the hospital. So there is a lot of innovation and creativity being offered to the healthcare infrastructure right now to make sure that we can safely prepare for a surge that we believe we will need to be prepared for. And with that, I will turn it over to Dr. Andy Thomas to provide more detail around the process that we went through and what that process resulted in terms of elective procedures. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. I'm Andy Thomas, Chief Clinical Officer from the Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center. I have a pleasure to represent the medical advisory group from the OHA that's been working with the governor's office over the past couple of weeks. As Mike said, we worked really on some direction that came from the American College of Surgeons, the U.S. Surgeon General, and what we're seeing going on in the state of Washington and now in the state of New York and other states to try and get ahead of the curve, as Dr. Acton has been explaining to us now for a few weeks. The group, the medical advisory group, put together a group of surgical leaders from our hospitals across the state to work to determine what cases would be safe to delay either surgeries or procedures, and how could we provide guidance that could be used uniformly across the state so that we're not creating a new problem by solving one, and we don't want to harm any patients who need surgery, but we want to be able to define which cases could be safely delayed so that they could be done 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks from now with no harm to the patient. So our group has worked over the last week to put together a set of principles that have been agreed to by the Ohio Hospital Association Board and been shared with the governor's office in the state about how we'll proceed. Basically, what we did is create criteria to make something not elective. We could have tried to define what is elective or tried to define what is not elective, and we chose the latter. So the way that we will define things that are not elective are a surgery or a procedure that is life-saving, a surgery or a procedure that preserves the function of an organ or preserves a limb for a patient, a surgery that will reduce the risk of metastasis or progression of disease for cancer or other condition, and a surgery that will reduce the risk of progression to severe symptoms for the patient. So we want to make sure that anything that fits into those four categories, preservation of life, preservation of organs or a limb, preventing progression of disease or metastasis for cancer, or progression to severe symptoms, anything that fits into those four categories will still be able to be done in the routine basis as it's been scheduled or potentially even moved up because other elective things are removed from the schedule. We feel that this step will do a number of things for us. First, it does help us with social distancing at the hospital. Fewer people in waiting rooms, fewer people coming into our facilities is most likely better to reduce the spread of infection. But really the goal of this is to preserve personal protective equipment that would be used in those surgeries. It's also to preserve beds, to preserve critical care beds, or even routine hospital beds that might be taken up by those patients when they're recovering from surgery. And also, it preserves key equipment, so ventilators. It allows us to free up staff to perform other functions, whether that's screening, swabbing, or really caring for more and more patients that we're getting in our hospitals that are being ruled out for coronavirus. So it was a very collegial process, good agreement both at the surgical level, the chief medical officer level, and then amongst the hospital board leadership at for the Ohio Hospital Association. And we feel it's a good process that we've been through and that it will make sure to preserve safety and quality of care in the state of Ohio.
I'm Tamara McBride. I'm the Chief of Health Preparedness at the Ohio Department of Health. My remarks today will be brief, but to follow up with Dr. Thomas and what Mike Abrams have talked about in terms of steps that are in place in order to maintain the surge that we anticipate seeing, it's important to recognize that conservation of PPE is paramount. If we don't do conservation steps now, we will not have healthcare workers that are protected to care for the most sick. So one of the things that the governor announced a few days ago was that we did indeed receive our allocation for the Strategic National Stockpile. What that means is that the federal government has allocated for each of the states a certain amount based on population that we will receive. We have received the full allocation for Ohio. That, though, is not enough. And so what we are asking for is all of the industries who are now taking on elective surgery postponements or cancellations to please contact your local EMA to ensure that that personal protective equipment is available so that healthcare workers, EMS, first responders have what they need in order to care for sick patients and to protect themselves. Conservation in this entire situation is paramount. We have to take those steps. It's one of the critical mitigation steps that we have to take to ensure that we have the healthcare professionals in place to be able to go into leverage those hospitals or those hotels that Mike Abrams talked about. We need to make sure that they are protected for the gunshot wounds that the director talked about, as well as the bursts that are still going to happen every single day. And those risks are still there. Those infectious diseases and those control practices are still very much real in spite of COVID-19. So ensuring that everyone is protected from our first responders to our healthcare workers is really, really critical. Again, I just want to reiterate that Ohio has received our full allocation of the stockpile. It is what we are going to get for now. I don't anticipate us receiving anything additional. They have communicated that as such. And so we are just going to have to work together on those conservation steps. Thank you very much.
John?
Thank you, Governor. I want to give an update on a couple things that we've been talking about the last couple of days, particularly as it relates to unemployment benefits. We have expedited the process for allowing someone to qualify for unemployment benefits. We asked yesterday that people not use the phone number but use unemployment.ohio.gov. Thank you for responding to that, because up until yesterday, we had a 95-minute wait on the phones. Now we've transitioned about 90% of that to the internet, and the wait time on the phone was down to 53 minutes, only 13 minutes on the website. So we're getting quite a high number of people who are being displaced in the economy due to the actions that are being taken to control the spread of the coronavirus. And we very much appreciate everybody cooperating and trying to use the tools that we're providing you in the most efficient way. A reminder to employers, we get calls every day about concerns about what type of employers might be shut down. Look, you can help yourselves here by making sure that if you have an employee who is ill or exhibiting signs, that you send them home, that you self-quarantine them. They would be, at that point, if you do not have a paid leave program, they would be eligible for unemployment benefits. We're trying to build that support system around people to make good decisions. And we know that there, as I've mentioned, that there are employers who and their workforce who are struggling. There also are some employers who are hiring. There are employers who have a great demand because of the nature of how the supply chain is working. For example, Amazon has announced that they will hire 4,600 new people just in Ohio alone, in warehouse, drivers, customer service, jobs that are good paying jobs, and we encourage people to look at those options. Again, I will reiterate, the restaurants in this state are available for carryout dining and delivery. These institutions, these restaurants could really use your support during this difficult time, and if you can use their services, they would really appreciate it. Let me also add a bit of new information. I've been on the phone, as you might imagine, a lot with Secretary of State Frank LaRose. We really appreciate his work and support of the health crisis that we are all facing. He made it known to me that the Madison County Board of Elections voted today to close the board offices because a poll worker who had been in the office over the past few days for training and picking up supplies and who was at a polling location exhibited symptoms of the coronavirus, and the poll worker is now being tested. These are the reasons that the director of health and the governor made the decision that was made, because we want to protect people. And I know that my telephone lit up last night from some of my elected official colleagues from around the state who felt that the disappointment of an extension of the voting period for elections. And I think this is a great opportunity for them to demonstrate that they're public servants, that we are putting the public's health interests ahead of our near-term political interests and making sure that individuals get a chance to vote and they can do so without putting their health in jeopardy. Those are the kinds of things that public servants with a public servant heart should really focus on trying to exhibit during these difficult times. I would also add that one of the things Secretary LaRose emphasized last night is that it would be impossible for him to have run the election this morning because of the fact that poll workers and wouldn't show up, and that would create a big disruption. That is indeed what happened in the states where they did try to conduct elections today. In many cases, poll workers just didn't show up. The polling locations couldn't open. And we didn't have to experience that today. And we will, working with the General Assembly and the courts, identify a way to make sure that we have an orderly opportunity, a safe opportunity for people to vote in this state. Thank you, Governor.
Before we get to questions, one more comment in regard to hospitals. Hospitals have contacted us in regard to their workforce and have requested permission to be able to set up child care facilities right there. We know from what has happened in other countries and what's happened in the past is that a virus like this, can also hit very heavily in regard to our healthcare workers. We know we need them. The hospitals understand that. We also have the situation where school is out and you have people who are working who have to have their children taken care of. So we will be making an announcement on that, but we certainly will be taking care of that as we move forward. Also, in regard to John's comments about carryout, my granddaughter Caroline and Izzy and I will be picking up some Irish food tonight, and we'll be taking it back to their home and also taking it to their grandmother, my wife Fran, and so we encourage other people to do that. This is a way that we can support the restaurants. It's also great food, and it's a way that we can, try to celebrate St. Patrick's Day in the special way that we have to celebrate it today. Thank you. Questions? And let me just indicate to our viewers, I don't think I did this, I'm actually looking at members of the press corps, the news corps, and they will be asking questions. I will actually be looking at them. Those of you on TV, you will not be able to see them, but you will be able to hear them as they're speaking right directly into a mic. And I've got one room over here and one room over here. And again, I'm looking at the TV cameras, and their rooms are not very far from. They're also in the Capitol building here. Hello, everybody.
Hello. Happy St. Patty's Day, everyone.
Thank you.
Lou Ann Stoya, ABC 6, Fox 28, Columbus. Governor, could you please give some direction? We've had viewers and funeral directors asking us for more direction on funerals. I think people are congregating in larger numbers and wanting to pay their respects, but they are reaching out and wondering if there's going to be further guidance on funerals and memorial services.
Well, this is certainly very difficult for families. I can tell you we were contacted by a friend of mine his family who died, and they were talking about how do we deal with this, how do we deal with the big funeral. They came to the conclusion that they would have their own service, but they would postpone the public service until later. Look, the sun's going to come out again. We are going to get back to normal. So we would just ask people, and that's a very difficult situation. The same thing with weddings. People have planned weddings for a long, long time. And, again, we would just ask them to figure out a way to celebrate the wedding, but maybe postpone the big celebration. The last thing that any of us want is for a funeral or a wedding to be the cause of someone else dying. Very happy occasion as far as the wedding. You don't want someone in the family to get sick. Obviously, it's difficult for relatives from out of state now to get in. So, again, I think just common sense, try to work your way through this. It's not easy, and I fully understand that, but your actions will impact the safety of your family, your loved ones, and those who you don't even know.
Hi, Governor. Molly Martinez, Spectrum News. I'm wondering if you could just talk a little bit about last night and sort of the constitutionality in making that call and making that health emergency and pushing back the election. Sort of what were your options and what was your line of thinking last night?
Well, we felt initially, as I indicated yesterday about this time, that there would be a lawsuit filed, that we would go into court, and that we would get an order extending the election to allow ample time for absentee voting, and then the election itself on June 2nd. That did not happen. We had a judge in Franklin County who made a different decision, and we were faced at 10 o'clock last night when we made the final decision with the situation that we needed to signal very quickly to poll workers, to voters, what the situation was. And it was clear that in the courts, we could have appealed it, but that would have occurred over the nighttime, and even if we were lucky, that decision may have been made in early morning. People would not have had much notice. So we had an imminent health crisis we had to deal with. The director of health, based upon everything she knows, based upon all the evidence, based upon consultation with Frank LaRose about how this would come down if, in fact, there was a election as we normally anticipated it, and she made that decision. I fully, fully support that decision. And we were able to get that out, I think, by some of the 10 o'clock news about 10:15, 10:20. And then, of course, for the 11 o'clock news, I think everybody across the state had the story. Those of you who on the print side were putting those stories up. So we did what we need to do to protect the people of the state of Ohio. And so it was a decision that I fully support. It was the right decision. Now our goal must be to allow people, what we said yesterday, allow people to vote, give them ample opportunity to vote. And either through the state legislature or through the courts, I'm confident that will happen.
Governor Jim Otte from WHIO-TV here in Dayton. Thanks. So far across the board, it appears that pretty much everybody across the state, although they may not like what everything you're doing, they are complying with it. Yet last night, when you went to delay the election, a couple of lawmakers, including one from the Miami Valley, actually tried to stop you and have this election actually occur today. Does that concern you, your reaction? And going forward, do you have any assurance that the legislature will go along with you with your plan to have this election on June 2nd? What's next?
Well, we are open to, certainly to discuss that. There's nothing magic about June 2nd. The date was picked because it would give ample opportunity for people to have absentee ballots and to vote. It would also, we felt, would be within the time, the Secretary of State felt it was within the time in which we would have to pick delegates. So the Democrats would pick their delegates, Republicans would pick their delegates, and that would be in time. Well, look, there's nothing magical about that date. But what is important, as we discuss this, is that people have an opportunity to vote over an extended period of time. And I say that because this is extraordinary circumstances. To quote Eleanor Roosevelt, as she talked about World War II, she said, this is no ordinary time. This is no ordinary time in Ohio. This is no ordinary time in the United States. And so we have to preserve all the constitutional rights. It would have been wrong to compel people to make a decision today whether they were going to risk their health, people who have compromised health, risk their health to exercise their constitutional right. That is wrong. And so I think Democrats, Republicans, Independents, whoever you are, we all should be in favor of ample opportunity for every Ohio citizen to vote, and that's kind of the bottom line as we talk to the state legislature, as we talk to the courts. That's what we think is very, very important, and I am confident that we can protect people's rights and give them that time. And again, I want to emphasize why that extra time is really, really necessary. And it is necessary because this virus infection is going to continue to hit Ohioans. And so we don't want anyone in a situation where they cannot vote. We want to give them plenty of time, as much time as humanly possible, understanding that this is a primary. And we're going to have ample time for people to campaign for the November election.
Governor Jim Province with the Toledo Blade. Last night, one of the reasons you didn't get the decision you wanted from the judge was because you hadn't called in the legislature to consider this first. Was there discussion yesterday about doing that? And was there ever in your mind the idea that the legislature should be subject to your 50 and fewer when it comes to mass gatherings?
No. Orders. We exempted out businesses. We have people who are going to work, basically. They're certainly going to work. We also excluded out the exercise of the First Amendment. So, you know, again, they would have to determine how they could do that, and I will not infringe upon their separate branch of government. But, you know, there certainly are ways, if they wanted to spread out, they could do that. As they voted, they could vote. Some people come in and vote. My experience is in the United States Congress, where sometimes over a 30-minute period of time, people come in and vote. And so you never have a huge number of people in the chambers. So there's ways of working that out, but we would not infringe upon their rights. And, you know, we excluded them out anyway. I would just assume that the Speaker and the Senate President and the Democrat leaders would want to protect their members as well, and I'm sure that they would do that.
Did you consider calling the legislature in last night?
We considered about everything. You know, it's a question of time, and you know, we would normally have appealed this and worked its way through the courts, but we felt that we had to tell people by 10 o'clock. We also felt that we had a public health emergency. We had public health crisis. We could not let this happen. We could not have people show up to the polls. We could not have poll workers show up. And so we made the decision. The director made the decision, which I fully, fully support.
Governor Andy Chow with Ohio Public Radio and Television State House News Bureau. With all the different issues coming up with bars and restaurants closing and companies dealing with all sorts of issues. We've heard you talk about the issue of, you know, lost wages and lost revenue. Do you foresee at some point you dipping into the rainy day fund to sort of offset some of the issues? And do you think that this gives you the authority, because of all the things that are happening, does this give you the authority to dip into the rainy day fund?
Well, this is a crisis of monumental proportions. So that money is available. It was set aside by the legislature and the previous governor, Governor Kasich, for purposes like this. And so, you know, we're going to be very prudent about how we do that. We've not made that decision to dip into it, but that money is available. It was set aside for difficult circumstances, and certainly we're in very difficult circumstances. So that money is certainly available. This is something that, you know, obviously we do in consultation with everyone, certainly including the legislative leaders, but that money is available.
Hello, Governor. Kevin Landers, WBNS-TV. Dr. Acton, you said that there is, quote, there is no scenario that we don't have a surge. In order to flatten that curve, and you have broad powers as a health director, at what point, at what threshold do you decide to shelter in place for our community?
Thank you so much for that question, Kevin. It will be a very complicated set of factors. In some essences, you know, and in talking to my sons in San Francisco, what we've said before, you will be able to get food even in China, even in Italy. There are, you know, people are getting out. We're going to keep the stores stocked, and we're going to be able to get medicines and those basic necessities. So while people even in San Francisco are sheltering in place and shelter in place, it was a very hard term as a mom to hear, but it actually is a term that's used in their emergency management system. So for them, that is the word. You probably won't hear me use that word. But in effect, that's kind of what we are doing in Ohio in a very gentle way. But again, if we see that beginning rise on our resources, on our health system, if we see, you know, worsening ICU unit use, that does start to press a threat on us. It's going to be an amalgam of factors, but that we would ask even more strict restrictions. Again, we really are in Ohio right now at a place where we're asking people to really ask those questions. Is this essential in everything you do? And that includes work, and I know many, many people are figuring out ways to work from home. That's not all possible, and there are essential workers in a lot of labor situations. We were just hearing about Amazon, and, you know, we're going to be getting packages of things out to people. That supply chain's still going, so we're going to need to keep those folks out there and really keep, you know, the few, you know, even in my team, we are taking turns being here. We're doing every call we can by conference call, all so that we don't have to pull any more of those, what we call triggers. So we'll keep you abreast as we make every decision. We'll let you know our thinking as we make that. It will happen gradually. Hopefully, you know, it won't be something sudden.
Let me just add to that. I know people who are already doing that, people who have made a decision because of their health situation, because of their age, to do that. And they're voluntarily doing that. Certainly, we recommend anybody who can do that, particularly people who have a particular health reason, to really, really limit the number of people that they come in contact with. And again, you know, I would just say to my fellow Ohioans, we're all in this together. If you've got a neighbor who's elderly, if you've got a neighbor who has a particular health issue, you know, get them some food, help them out. We've got to take care of each other. But Ohioans are doing this, and Ohioans who, particularly those in that situation, really need to be very, very, very careful.
Good afternoon, Governor. Randy Ludlow with the Columbus Randy? Dispatch. The CDC issued its guidance revised on Sunday to limit mass gatherings to 50 people. Why not cast the public health order to close the polls on Sunday night or Monday morning to avoid casting your lot with the uncertainty of the courts and the ensuing chaos?
Well, Randy, that's a good question. Look, we're trying to take these things one at a time. Would it have been preferable to have that decision made before it was made? Yes, absolutely. But you had a lot of things starting to come together that morning, on Monday morning. And let me just recite a couple of them. One, of course, was, you know, first time, you know, we started seeing that the CDC, while it was issued the night before, we looked at it. That's important. But the other thing that, you know, when we started talking to Frank LaRose, and the Lieutenant Governor and I both started receiving on Monday morning indications from people as they contemplated what they were going to do the next day. And at this point, they no longer could get an absentee ballot. And people were saying it was just starting to sink into some people with all the things that's swirling around that it was not good for them to go vote. If you looked at the news Monday morning, first thing I saw coming up on the news on TV that morning, the message was coming out very, very hard to people. If you have a compromised medical situation or if you're older, you know, really you shouldn't be going out at all. And so then we started looking at this and said, look, there's two messages coming out. Message is vote. We want everybody to vote. Message at the same time is, you know, many people should be staying home. And so how do you put those two messages together? And we're sending mixed signals to people, and they were getting those mixed signals throughout, not just from us, but from everybody nationwide. And they then had to make a decision, which do I do? That is not helpful for people being able to exercise their constitutional rights. That is, it really, the messages they were getting, and no one intended it this way, but the messages they were getting was that was vote suppression, and that was going to tamp down the vote. But the most important thing is for those individuals, they were being presented with a very, very difficult choice. The more we looked at it and the more we looked at that day, came to the conclusion that this election just, as normally set, could not take place and preserve the safety of the people of the state of Ohio. And so should it have been made earlier? Look, we can all look back and say, I wish I'd done that. I wish I'd made it earlier. But that's when we made that decision, and that's where we are today.
Hi, Governor. This is Laura Bischoff, Dayton Daily News. Back in October of 2014, during the Ebola scare, Ohio purchased some 23,000 sets of PPE. I'm wondering if that material is still available, what happened to it, and if Ms. McBride might be able to give us some more information, more details on the national stockpile release. How much did we receive, and you know what percentage of the need is filled by that?
Yeah, so we do have the cash and even some from H1N1, to be quite honest. So the limited amount that was purchased during H1N1 as well as during Ebola, those resources are also available, but they are in limited quantities based on the cascading impacts that we are anticipating. So that's why the conservation is really very important, because even that small amount will not really fill the entire gap of what we can anticipate based on the modeling that has been provided, what the healthcare industry and our EMS providers and our long-term care are going to see. So those resources are available. We are working together to try to figure out a way to allocate those resources out to make sure that all of our workforces are being taken care of. But again, it certainly isn't enough to remedy the problem, which is what is going to happen when the surge occurs in our healthcare system.
And the national stockpile, can you tell us some numbers?
You know, the strategic national stockpile allocated to all of the states 25% of what they had. And so we received our full allocation of what was identified for Ohio. I can get more specific numbers for you at another time.
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll try to provide more of that as well as we do. We have regional coordinators who kind of do an assessment on a weekly basis as well. I want to say on those numbers, Laura, they were in the hundreds of thousands, not in the millions. So it is a very, very small amount that we received in the hundreds of thousands when I saw the numbers, not in the millions. Yeah, we'll get you more exact numbers, but each state was given an allotment per capita. So that's the reality we're working from. Thank you.
This is Laura Hancock with Cleveland.com. Governor DeWine, you've said that maybe one of the solutions for reopening polling places at a later date would come from the legislature. Are they allowed to legally meet in person at this time? Are they allowed to meet remotely? Like, what is the situation with that?
Well, I would expect that they would take in consideration the safety of their members and would be able to meet and vote in a manner that was consistent with that. As far as what we have put out, as far as our orders, our regulations, we exempted out basically anybody exercising the First Amendment rights. And so certainly the legislature comes under that category. So, you know, our order does not include the state legislature, their co-equal branch of government. So, yes, they will be able to, would be able to meet. We also have items and a list of items that we will be sharing with the leadership of the legislature of things that we believe we need to have passed that we cannot do by executive order, but only the legislature can do, but they all relate to this crisis. So we will all, in addition to the election issue, we're going to have give them another list of things that we would want them to consider.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Jackie Borchert from the Cincinnati Enquirer. I've heard from a lot of parents and teachers who are concerned about the loss of learning during this time. What is the prospect of picking up the school year in the summer or even repeating some of this education that's supposed to be happening in the fall?
Well, the way that this is being handled by the schools is that these days are counting. Teachers are, by and large, being paid for this. You have cafeteria workers who, I think in most school districts, are continuing to be paid. That food is going out to students, to those 18 years of age and under. The schools are all doing what they can as far as learning. And, you know, the focus is on to continue that learning during this period of time. We stop school or we stop in-person school for 3 weeks, but the odds are very heavy that that period is going to go on for an extended period of time. And so we want the learning to continue. This is something, in regard to your specific question, certainly something that the legislature and I would be discussing, but we've got to get through this first. We've got to see where we are. But our message to the schools, and we have teachers who are just doing a heroic job in teaching the students either online or kind of the old-fashioned way, which is sending assignments home in those areas where they cannot do it online. So thanks to the teachers again. A shout out to the teachers. Thank you for what you're doing to keep these kids educated, and we move forward.
Hi, Governor. Andrew Welsh Huggins with the Associated Press. This is somewhat of a follow-up to Andy's question on with the surge in unemployment applications. What are your concerns about the state unemployment insurance fund and its ability to absorb that? It did take a big hit, I think, during the last recession. How is it doing now, and what actions might you take specifically regarding that fund to get through this time period?
Lieutenant Governor has been working on that, but let me just say that we have known that there has to be a fix in regard to the fund. We've known that for some time, even before this crisis. This needs to be done. It's something that we will have to address with the state legislature, with the Senate, and with the House. John, I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
I guess, Andrew, I would want to add that while this is a challenge on how we will finance the unemployment compensation system going forward, workers out there should not be worried. It will be funded for their needs. Okay, it's just a matter of how we put together the package between what the federal government ultimately does and other short-term, long-term solutions. Certainly the General Assembly will need to take action at some point in time for the long-term stability of the fund.
Thank you.
Hi, Governor. Max Philby with the Columbus Dispatch. Was wondering if you could elaborate a little bit more on the order you're planning with regard to elective surgeries. And then also separately, wanted to ask you if there are any updates regarding daycares or public transit.
No updates on the latter, other than what I did announce, and that is that we're going to move forward at the request of hospitals that want to really start moving in regard to daycare and allowing them to establish new daycare that will be right there that will enable them to have the workers who are there. So, and the first question was?
Can you elaborate a little bit more with regard to the order about elective surgeries?
Yeah. That really is going to be consistent with what the Hospital Association agreed to, and that's what Mike was talking about, as well as Andy as well. So I don't know if you have any specific questions about it. They can address that. But this is something that's been worked out. And again, you don't want to deny someone, a surgery that is needed. It's the last thing anybody wants to do. On the other hand, if we can postpone some that are elective, then we save the equipment. We save the protection. We also, depending on what the surgery is, may save a bed for a day or two or a few days. So these are things, but we have to let the professionals work this out in regard to what's essential and what is not. They've come to us with a resolution of that, a definition of that, which still allows enough flexibility. We've adopted that. That will be what the order says. Yeah, sure.
In terms of additional clarification, I would say to patients out there that have a surgery scheduled, say, in the next 2 to 4 weeks, to check in with your provider, whether it's a procedure or a surgery, if it's a gastroenterologist, a cardiologist, or a surgeon of one of many types. I think it's important. Those hospitals, we've announced at Ohio State this last evening, any patient who's going to be impacted by this is going to be contacted directly. I don't want patients to assume which category their procedure falls into. Some are obviously very clear-cut, some are not. So I would recommend if a patient has a question, they should reach out to the person who's planning to do their surgery or procedure and ask that provider. Also, I will say that the high-level principles that I talked about are going to be applied then at the local level based on what each hospital or facility does. So different types of surgery would apply at an outpatient ambulatory surgery center versus a large academic medical center. So each facility is going to be applying those and creating a governance model within the organization to get down to the detailed level of what's in which category. So there will certainly be more information at the local level from each hospital that you should be receiving. And also, as a patient, like I said, you should be receiving a call to let you know if your procedure's been canceled. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Thomas. And just to elaborate on that a bit, we were after a couple principles. One is that whenever the policy was established, we did not want it to, we wanted it to apply statewide. So if a type of procedure is being unavailable in Cleveland, we did not want a situation where the same type of procedure was happening in Toledo or somewhere else. The other thing is, at the end of the day, we wanted to make sure that we left lots of judgment opportunity for the physician and the patient, because there are gallbladders, for example, that can wait safely. There are other patients with a similar presentation that cannot safely wait. So at the end of the day, it is going to be, there is an opportunity for the physician and the patient together to do that assessment and determine whether this is a procedure that that needs to proceed, despite the fact that we have these guidelines.
Governor, this is Shane Stegmiller with Hannah News Service. There are some in the legislature who are suggesting that the primary needs to be vote by mail only. Do you think that would be an option for you, or do you feel that there has to be some kind of in-person voting day?
I
want to follow up on Laura's questions.
I think if you know, we put forward a suggestion, we put forward an idea, which we think is, of course, it's our idea. We think it's the best idea, but we're open to discussion. Where I'm not open to discussion is in regard to making sure that voters, Democrats voting in a Democrat primary, independents voting on issues, and Republicans voting in a Republican primary, all need plenty of time. They need time to be able to do this. And so that's not negotiable. But everything else, if we can work it out so that people have the opportunity to vote in this crisis of 100 years, yes, we can work something out. But we have to have an extended period of time to vote.
And then a follow-up to Laura's question. You said you have a list of things you're going to send over to the legislature. Can you elaborate on any of those things?
No, not yet. I mean, these are things we're still putting together. But these are things we're looking at as we go into this crisis, things that we're going to need to be able to do. And we need legislative authority to do it. And that's going to be the criteria. And we'll be, you know, talking to the legislature, and we'll certainly be sharing that with all of you.
Kevin Landers, 10 TV. I have a two-part question for you. We're getting calls to our station about why hair and nail salons remain open. Can you explain why those are still open? And secondly, when it comes to PPEs, when the surge happens, can you guarantee that every Ohioan will have a ventilator who needs one? Thank you.
We're to take the second part of your question, we're working every day, and you just heard a lot of efforts that are being made and a lot of decisions that have been made to try to make sure every Ohioan has what they need, whether that's a ventilator, whether that's a hospital room, whatever that is. No one can guarantee anything. This is a huge, huge crisis. But what we can tell you is we're planning ahead. We're doing everything we can. And everybody gets sick of hearing it, but we're trying to do everything we can to be St. Louis and not Philadelphia. If we're Philadelphia, we're probably not. If we're St. Louis, we're probably going to be able to do it and be able to be okay. So that's the goal. Hair, nail, we could probably come up with 20 other examples. These are things that, may be in the future. We're going to assess things. We're going to assess things where we think the risk is. We have dealt with the kind of the big things where you get the most impact. We've done that through the restaurants and done it through the bars, meetings, people coming together in small numbers, closing the schools, making sure that our nursing homes are protected. So we've done the big things, but there are smaller things that we as we analyze this, we may do. But I will once again say that the most important thing anybody can do is what you do, and the Ohio citizens, the 11.67, Amy has corrected me, 11.7 million Ohioans, what they do as individuals, what each one of us does every single day. And we just have to be mindful of what we're doing, mindful of the space, try to stay away from each other as much as we can, and don't do things that put us at risk, and don't do things that put us to unnecessary risk to our neighbors and our friends. That is the most important thing that we can do. So if people can postpone something, don't do it, don't go out, don't have that contact, they should do that.
Hi, Governor. Mark Taylor, NBC4 Columbus. We've heard a little bit of optimism from the administration here as far as we will get to the other side of this. We will return to normal. Do we know any timeline at this point, or is this all too much evolving of a situation?
No, I don't think we know the timeline. I think there's been, Dr. Acton has talked about this possibly peaking around May 1, but no one knows that those numbers for sure. So we've got to take that. It's got to go up, and then obviously it's got to start down.
Yeah, even the modeling that I was sharing today, these are models. They're taking a bunch of assumptions, and the best data we have, which as we see now is now changing hourly. Last press conference, it changed during our press conference. So what we can say is some of the early modeling is saying mid-May, and the more we do, the more it slows. But that's a good thing. But you already saw indications, even from the president, that this is a long haul, and it is an unprecedented situation. So I think, what we do in these immediate days have the most important impact because we're trying. This is where we can still drastically change that curve. But the more time that goes on, it's going to be the smaller things we do, and we are looking, It's the hope that the industries themselves are coming up with a lot of guidance. There's so many orders I haven't written but that businesses and others just took upon themselves to do. These aren't orders to police people by and large, although we do have those quarantine powers. This was to help people, and sometimes that helps the actual businesses themselves come and ask us for this guidance. And I've been hearing some of those same questions that were mentioned around the personal care industry, and it's something we're certainly taking a look at.
I'm sorry.
I just want to add one thing. We keep emphasizing about how we're all in this together. And we are, because for everybody who self-quarantines, who takes extra precautions, who uses common sense, means that they slow the spread, means that we get through this collectively faster and healthier, both from a physical health point of view and an economic point of view. What Dr. Acton and the governor are asking of people, what we're asking of people, is that the better job you do at helping control the spread, the better off we're all going to be. And we can't write a rule or regulation that's going to solve every problem, but collectively, when we act smart about this, we're going to be benefiting all of us in the end.
Laura Bischoff, Dayton Daily News. First off, I'd like to thank you all for doing these daily briefings. They're enormously helpful for us in the press. Governor DeWine, Lieutenant Governor Husted, and Dr. Acton, have any of you been tested for COVID-19?
No, I've not been.
I have not been, no.
Nor have I. And there have been fantasies in my mind of a quarantine somewhere warm, but no. And we're working as hard as everyone else. As you see us dancing around each other up here, and you should see our meeting. I mean, even if viewers could see the screens and the elaborate things we're taking. And all of us, and especially those who aren't in essential jobs, we're doing our very best to stay healthy.
But let me add that if at any moment any one of us exhibited any signs, we would immediately go do something like that.
That's right. Governor, I've been told I'm the last question. Lou Ann, ABC 6, Fox 28, Columbus. Yesterday, you said you were not ready to make any announcement on the National Guard. Could you elaborate a little bit about what the Guard is doing to prepare in case they are needed and that you will call them out?
Well, I talked to General Harris today. We had a discussion, actually, today about the Guard. He and I talk, you know, whenever necessary, and I get briefed. But I was assured by the general that the Guard is prepared to do whatever the Guard needs to do. Let me point out one thing that he pointed out to me, and that is if we have members of the Guard to go in and do medical work, all we're doing is pulling them from one segment into another. So these are people who, you know, have a private world, and you know, they go back, they go into the Guard, or they're in the Guard, but they are utilized by the Guard. So you're not gaining anything. That person might have been a physician, that person might have been a nurse, a paramedic, and you're moving them from one position to another position. So generally, unless there's a real critical area, you probably don't gain anything, or you don't get anything by doing that. But we've gone through different scenarios, and look, the Guard is prepared, but we have no plans to call out the Guard, and when we do, we'll certainly notify the public and notify you all.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody. Thank you very much.